thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. So in this discussion or therapy session, we would like to share our feelings about the Swarm and distance conjecture and also take the opportunity to bring string theory, string convexifications, and the mathematics of asymptotic string convexifications into the game. As I was told, there were statements today, in particular on the web, that somebody said that this is all not mathematically rigorous, and I think this is one of the conjectures which have been addressed in a very rigorous way and can
be
addressed.
What was the paper?
It was not a paper, it was just somebody uttered their opinion.
What do you mean by that? Sorry.
It's on video.
No, that's what I just curious. What is the purpose?
Also, blogger. Certain blogger.
Oh, not a blogger, not guy.
No.
Okay.
It's a valid opinion. It's a valid opinion, but we can show that it's not
a blogger.
It's not necessarily the case. Okay. So Wolfgang and I prepared a few points that we'd like to share just to bring everyone on the same page in case you haven't thought about the Swarm and distance conjecture all your life. And of course, everything is open to discussion. So these are the points that came to our mind. Many can be added by you, but if you have something on your mind to say, maybe it's good to wait until that point comes up just for structure, but of course everybody can utter their opinion anytime. Okay, so first, setup and relevance. Of course, the Swarm and distance conjecture, as formulated by Oguri and Buffer, states that if you have a quantum theory of gravity with a moduli space of fields, where the first assumption is that these fields do not have a potential to begin with, then you can take a limit at infinite distance in that moduli space with the metric of those fields. And when you do that, you get a situation where a tower of states becomes asymptotically light. So we have a moduli space, which is supposed to look like that. We can take a limit, delta phi over M Planck, in the distance defined by the kinetic terms of the moduli fields to infinity, an asymptotic limit. And in that limit, one gets a tower of states whose masses go like mn squared equal m0 squared, which could be some reference value, the Planck scale, or some reference value somewhere in the middle of moduli space, times e to the minus alpha, delta phi, the metric, over m Planck, for delta phi to infinity to begin with, where alpha is a constant, which is typically assumed to be order 1. So in particular, to mention, of course, this is true for a tower of states. So we go to infinite distance in moduli space and hence get a tower of master states, infinitely many such states. This is to be compared with singularities at finite distance in moduli space, where oftentimes, or typically, you get finitely many states, at least finitely many weakly coupled states. If you go to strong coupling, situation can be different. This statement can be refined. So this was the original statement, of course, by Uri Buffer. This can be refined. One could, for example, question or speculate that this behavior should hold not only in the strict asymptotic limit, but also when delta phi over Planck is order 1-ish. So the first refinement could be to ask, when exactly does this phenomenon kick in? This refinement in particular, this was stressed in particular in a paper by Clever and Palti, but also, I think, certainly assumed in the original paper. And correspondingly, alpha should be order 1. And whether or not this is true is, of course, particularly important when it comes to applications to cosmology, and we will discuss this, also what the value of alpha is. And the second potential refinement would be, what type of tower of states becomes light? So what is the physics at asymptotics? Which states do we have? So which states become light? Which tower? And in particular, this is related to, heavily related to the concept of duality and string emergence, which we will be then discussing in the sequel.
So the version that you're talking about, which you say delta phi over m pound should be only bigger than or equal to 1, in the original version it was much, much bigger than 1.
Yes.
And part of the reason is that the middle of moduli was not defined. So if you start with one of those boundaries, very, very far in, and go the other way, you'll have to go much, much bigger than implied to get the other way. So the statement is not invariant until you know what's the middle of moduli space. So that refinement does not make sense until you define what interior means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So can you start at the boundary? Like,
you can. I mean, the original statement was, I take any point, including very, very deep into one boundary.
Wait, but you start with a theory with a lot of light states to begin with.
No, but you can even get lighter if you go farther, either any direction. That was the statement. That is, we didn't have to make any assumptions of what the starting point is. So without that, if you want to get a sharper statement like the one, then you have to define what you mean to be, that there is an interior, and what does that mean. Yeah. So that was hold only for the particular points.
Yeah, if you comment, because we have always instructing about this, that usually if people talk about Calabi-Yau's, you know, they start at a weakly coupling limit, a large limit, where you have a point of maximal unipotent monotomy, which means you have a distinguished period x0, which behaves as power series, and that is sort of defines the frame as a flat coordinates which you use. But if you start in the interior moduli space, there's no distinguished x0 to start with. In the a priori, there's no good definition actually what you mean, because essentially all the states are mixed up. There's no particular well-defined starting point to begin with.
Yeah, that's why the only general statement I would say is.
Yeah, you have to start from one well-defined.
Fix one point, and it doesn't matter where you are, and then you can go as far as you want to get like six.
I think this is assuming that any geodesic that you study, like in the interior, far from the infinite distance.
Yeah, no, but you have to. So before you get to that, you have to define the notion of interior.
Yeah.
So that you could try to say, well, that's what you mean, that there are no light states beyond.
You have a cutoff.
You could say that all the states are within some cutoff. That's what you mean by region. Yeah. This depends on your cutoff and so forth. Yes, you can.
But this brings another problem, geodesic. For this, you need to define a coordinate. Usually, it's a flat coordinate you use.
Sorry, why do you need a coordinate to define geodesic? Geodesic is a well-defined concept. Take two points, the shortest distance between them.
Well, you have to define somehow what coordinates you
what? I have a comment on this.
It's a geometry.
Well, don't you use a metric to start with?
Metric is coordinate independent. You can write it in a coordinate system if you wish, but the notion of metric is not even coordinates.
I have a comment on this.
Yes?
Maybe you remember we had a slight debate with Dieter Lüst when he was trying to discuss different variants, and we claim, both you and I claim, that it should be different variant. It's the concept of a distance
between theories.
Independently of the moduli space. Remember that story?
Yeah.
Not remembering. What was the discussion? The different theories of what?
He discussed the concept of distance between manifolds independently of moduli space, like in theories which are more general than n equals 2. And then he made a claim that there's a coordinate dependence.
Oh, yeah. I didn't understand that statement.
I thought it was wrong. I now see the point. I just want to share that we discussed much more carefully.
Yeah.
And it is not at all obvious, before you have a finite set of coordinates, how to define the distance on this general space of manifolds. You see, the way it normally goes, the formula that he also used, you first restrict yourself to a finite dimension subspace, for example, moduli space or some other subspace, on which you have some coordinates, and then you can use the formula that we discussed for the distance measurement. But if you just talk about the space of manifolds with metrics, in that generality, the space is infinitely dimensional, and the distance is standard formula with delta g mu nu squared integrated, that is not different variant. It's truly not different variant. So we don't know what we are doing.
Well, we can talk about that, but I don't think this holds for the question that we are talking about here. We're talking about the scalar fields, which could have been the moduli of some compact manifold and all that. In that context, I think there's a well-defined notion of metric. But what I mean is that there is a kinetic term that defines a metric.
But that I agree.
Let's focus on the simplest, because I think that it doesn't need the more general version.
I just wanted to share
talk about that
the other issue is not as simple as it appeared to us.
We should discuss that, because I'm not seeing it yet.
So, a simple question is Euclidean formulations. The metric is not Riemannian. Do we still have geodesic distance in mind?
Sorry, what is not Euclidean?
Euclidean theories, there should be, for instance, in Euclidean formulation, the moduli space is not anymore, what is it, SU11 over U1, it's SO2, 1 over SO11, because the axiom flips sign. You can take, for example, a supergravity in Euclidean formulation. There's a unique way to recrotate the E77 coset, and it will be non-Riemannian. So I can have light-light geodesics, and it will travel according to that formula zero distance.
Well, so we are talking about the positive definite metric for sure, when we are talking about this.
So it doesn't apply to the Euclidean formulation.
We are talking about the physical formulation, the Lorentzian.
The reason why I also wanted to bring this up is the specific value of alpha, which also needs to be addressed, even if we look at the asymptotic form. And we can leave this for a little bit for the applications, because there it will become crucial. Okay, and now let me just make some recall some general statements. We are all aware of them, but to make sure this is documented and we are all on the same page, of course, the relevance is apart from applications, is also this has great relevance intrinsically to the SwarmFed program, as has been already pointed out many times, because first of all, it is the conjecture which illustrates the breakdown of effective field theories, meaning that whenever a tower of states, an infinite tower, becomes light, usual effective field theory reasoning breaks down, which is one of the important aspects of this program. Second, it is the prime example, or one of the prime example, exhibiting UVIR mixing. So in order to make a statement what this tower is, we really need some input from the UV. So we had also this discussion if all of these conjectures could be understood coming from the IR and from the perspective of effective field theory. In my opinion, this is certainly one conjecture which cannot, because we need the input.
Right, I'm very confused. It was a prime example of a perfect IR consistent conjecture. In the IR, I move my theory, I measure the distance, as Kumon just said, by the kinetic term of my field. So if I go infinitely far on a geodesic.
And what I mean by this is that the states that come down have to be defined. These are states which in the interior of moduli space, you would say live in the UV, in that sense. So if you only know, I don't know, gauge group masses, fields, and so on, then clearly you would say you can go to infinite distance without encountering anything strange. But you really need to have in mind that there might be and will be states at a higher scale which become down. In that sense, it was meant.
I think the word UVIR mixing has been used historically in situations where I have no good example that the normal EFT logic in the IR breaks down.
Okay, so maybe I meant that the cutoff will be far below the original cutoff that you thought. Or UV irrelevant.
Yeah,
of
that's the sense, I would say. It's reasonable to say that UV mixing. That's hinting that there are these extra states which are crucial for the consistency of the theory, and they are in the UV. And that's I think, is fair.
So this would be a
difference. The far insight is very massive, so you're predicting it's not very UV states. That's the other way of saying it.
And finally, this was discussed already last week, but we can just recall it. The SwarmFed distance conjecture, for these reasons and others, is of course at the center and related critically to many other conjectures that have appeared. So for example, the no global symmetry conjecture, as we already discussed. Because as we go to delta phi over M Planck, which I set to 1 now to infinity, typically we get also a regime where the gauge coupling G goes to 0, which henceforth is forbidden. And this would be my first question to the audience. Are we aware of situations where this is not implied by delta phi to infinity? So let me continue, and then maybe we can discuss this. So the question would be,
some gauge coupling.
Is it always the case, necessarily the case, that there exists some gauge coupling?
Some discoupling of some free-fall gauge field.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
so
not necessarily our
so to make it more precise, what you mean is that the tower is charged, number one.
Yes.
That's an extra conjecture.
Yes.
Secondly,
indeed,
that charged, right.
Yes.
Tower is charged, and that charge of those towers goes to zero.
Precisely. So maybe I should first have also pointed out this relation, of course. So the weak gravity conjecture, as we all know, states something of this type, that a charge times gauge coupling should be bigger than m squared over m Planck squared over d minus 2 times some number, and possibly other corrections. And if we assume that this tower contains charge states, then in the limit delta phi to infinity, which means g to 0, it certainly is consistent with that relation. So this is in particular related to the tower version of the weak gravity conjecture.
I think that's almost provable, because if you have large distance, you almost always, I think you always go to Zuzi, mm-hmm. approximately Zuzi, then you have a chiral multiplet, the imaginary part is an axion, and that f axion always goes to zero in that limit. So I think unavoidable. Mm-hmm.
Good. And of course, applying this logic.
Sorry, but again, the question is whether it's something general, not related to supersymmetry.
Mm-hmm. I don't know of an example where you can go to infinite distances without restoring supersymmetry.
Why?
I just don't know of an example. I don't know why.
Images of Sistine heterotics. I mean, like, that doesn't go to supersymmetric.
Yes. I don't know of an example where you can go to infinite distance in a controlled wave.
But it's not always an axiom.
I just said it's always an axiom. The imaginary part of the of a car. I don't know of an example where the imaginary part.
That's an example, right?
Exactly.
For
the dimensions. System, there is no axiom.
Of course, it's four dimensions. Sorry, four dimensions. Four dimensions. I'm talking about four dimensions.
Okay. Yeah. But more generally, I mean, we know it's something in a strange thing with there is no axiom.
Sorry, apologies. I only made a statement about four dimensions. I have
so to. It could also be higher p-form fields. This g need not be one form gauge symmetry.
Yes. And I think it's, I don't know, like I've had this question for 1 year now, mm-hmm. like, can we find an example of a tower that is not charged and that is
well,
not related to the gravity?
Well, let me understand what you mean by charge, first of all. Do you mean literally gauge, for example, could that gauge symmetry be Higgs? Are you allowing that when you say charge or not? There could be an approximate gauge symmetry. It could be Higgs, in other words. Uh-huh. Are you including that in your list or not? Because I can imagine things that you don't really have a gauge symmetry, but in the farther and farther distance, you get an approximate gauge symmetry emerging. Is that
in
your list?
Do you have an example in mind of that?
I could imagine, because you could have, for example, some of these decompactification limits might not have an exact gauge symmetry, but in the large distance called approximate, the rotation symmetry of something takes over, you have an approximate gauge symmetry, and therefore approximate. So there's no precise thing in those contexts.
What about type 1, right? In type 1, you have a string which can break, so it's not charged under any gauge symmetry.
But
you have an action that is going... Sorry, you have a... So the
from the brains.
From the brain.
You can get also
deformed
speed that
you can... Oh, you mean the world of engaged fields.
Exactly.
If it is an axion that... Well, it is an axionic coupling, gauge coupling. We would be talking about towers of instantons rather than particles. Is there always, these states always refer to particles?
Very good, very good. I think this will then be part of the second type. What types of states? What type of states there are? Indeed. So maybe we'll say
this conjecture refers to the mass particles.
Right.
Particles means states in the Hilbert space.
Yes.
Could be, for example, string excitation. Yes. Do you call this particles?
Right. But what Alfred was saying. The answer or?
Not instantons. So the instantons do not affect the unless the instanton affect the mass spectra. So that statement is about the mass spectrum in the Hilbert space.
Yeah.
I mean, in all examples we know they are connected, right? When you have that instanton, you will also have a string whose excitation.
So, but that's an extra step in this relation. Arthur was saying, well, any time you go in the infinite distance, you have an axion whose decay constant goes to
Sometimes it goes to zero, and that's
where
you get
zero.
The strings.
It's crucial
to zero.
Then it could be strings. Well, it could be strings. It could be sometimes maybe instantons.
Pablo, I did not say that the charge states and instantons are to do with the tower.
No, but
the tower has a gauge coupling.
But there's a relation in that diagram to the weak gravity conjecture, so I was wondering how general these statements are.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. There is a general relation. Sorry, let me put down the axion case again. If axion goes to zero,
right.
The string tension goes
to
zero.
Yeah.
And there's a different story than the tower, but it's a cutoff that comes down. Yeah. Very unambiguously, yeah. It's related.
So, in fact, as we'll propose or recall in section two, this should be related precisely to the particles in that case. Okay, but big role has played, in particular, also in yesterday's talk, the ADS conjecture, that masses go like lambda to the minus alpha or alpha tilde. I'm not sure. It's definitely not the same alpha. So this comes from application of the distance conjecture to the metric itself, and also the DS conjecture, which where the connection to Swanson distance came by assuming that the tower of states is responsible for the entropy of the sitter space, which then gives a result on monotonically decreasing potential. And further connections that have already been pointed out, just to remind us again, would be an arrow in the other direction. The TCC would give a lower bound on that order one parameter alpha. So from that, alpha would be, I think the value to quote would be 2 over d square root d minus 2 d minus 3 d minus 1. And other relations, and so this shows that it's really at the center. Please.
Can I ask one thing? So imagine for a moment that it's true that the tower of the distance conjecture is always charged. I don't know, that can always be identified with a tower satisfying the weak gravity conjecture. Mm-hmm. So the two things come together. I mean, then to what extent makes sense to think of a tower or lattice version of the weak gravity in the middle of the moduli space? Because this mm-hmm. tower only appears asymptotically. Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
Wouldn't we have just like some strong version of the weak gravity at the asymptotic
exactly.
limits, but in the middle of the moduli space,
very
a
good.
Nice version that is enough to guarantee black
yes.
hole decay, but
very
doesn't
good.
Contain light particles?
That was exactly one of the points. Let's discuss this now. That's very good.
Can you amplify? I didn't completely understand. Maybe one of you can say the input.
Yeah, I'm saying like imagine that the tower of the distance conjecture is also satisfying the gravity conjecture that, in fact, what we are discussing is always charged,
yeah.
So it's the same thing. Then we know that these towers only appear asymptotically, right? So to what extent do we expect the weak gravity conjecture, like a strong version of the weak gravity, like a tower weak gravity or a lattice weak gravity conjecture, hold in the middle of the moduli space? Because the tower.
This is related to some point I brought about the stability of these states.
Right.
How many of them there exist?
Very good. And there are situations where, in principle, also in string complications, I think.
Yeah.
The gauge coupling could be tied to the Planck scale if you have very few moduli. For example, F theory on P2 or something like this, where you don't have a tensor multiplet in six dimensions now. So your gauge coupling would sit at the same scale, controlled by the same hypermultiplet as the Planck scale. And we want the weak gravity conjecture probably to still hold, but we can't prove it in that case because we don't have that limit. That would be something. I wanted to. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm confused. I thought it was a strong conjecture, which we all believe, that going to weak gauge coupling, you need to go to infinity moduli space, right?
Right.
Isn't that something that we all believe, right? That's part of the kind of set of conjectures that there's a strong.
Right. But the question is, can you still do this?
If you go to, if you can, you cannot get small gauge coupling unless you go to infinity in field space.
So that's almost tautology, I would say. No?
Yes. Yes.
Just
yes.
Because every parameter is a field.
Yes.
Including G.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So then I don't understand. So what Irene is proposing is whether there can be a tower without going to infinity, a tower of states coming down.
I mean, when we talk about the tower with gravity or the lattice with gravity, we are expecting to have this lattice everywhere, right? Like, it's not something that depends on if we go to the asymptotic limits.
But you cannot have this coming down.
Exactly. It need not come down. So we're asking, suppose we cannot take the limit g to 0 without also taking M Planck to infinity.
Right.
Which we would not want to do because we decompactify and then we have to reassess. But maybe that's the answer to the question. So suppose we are at the point where g is small but order one-ish, does there then still exist a tower?
Well, there is a naive answer to that question, I would say, from Hawking's formula. if you're not interested in light states, if you're interested in UV states, then Hawking, Bickerson Hawking entropy tells us that almost saturated ones exist.
They do not that
they do exist.
They do exist.
So if you put equality almost, there could be corrections which pushes in the inequality sign, but ignoring that little correction, you would say, oh yeah, Bickerson Hawking already proved that the spectrum is not is all the way occupied, no matter how high a charge you go. So therefore, yes, it is an answer to Irene's question. Yes, yes, indeed, inside is true that if you interpret weak gravity conjecture to stating that mass is almost equal to charge for some state, which is essentially not worrying about whether the correction goes a little up, a little down, it cannot go too much up, it cannot go too much down, because the statement of the black hole would be false.
But then you're thinking that
it's
satisfied by small black holes,
no?
Or
yeah, so that's no, I'm talking about the UV states now. UV. I'm
just how
thinking,
heavy? Like,
very heavy. I know, I'm just
so
saying that.
Small, what we call it, small black holes.
So the question is, if you're talking about tower, for tower you're talking about very hard charge. I'm assuming, unless you're talking about something else. If you're talking about a very large charge, then you can bring in the, then it becomes like a macroscopic black hole, also is one of those. In those cases, we already know they are occupied. So there is a sense in which the tower version already follows from the Bickerson-Hawking. The sign that, so I'm being a little bit extrapolating, because Bickerson-Hawking says it's equality, and we know, well, it's equality is not necessarily true. There could be corrections and so forth. So, but morally, I think that's a statement that is already the beginning of the extension.
But it could be, if we are thinking of a lattice, it could be that the index of this lattice is very large in material, right? So the first one that appears is already very heavy, like a very small black hole.
Well, I'm saying that.
I don't think that can happen.
No. Sorry, I'm saying that you'd be saying that Bickerson-Hawking formula would not work for those otherwise. If you're saying, no, you have to go to 10 to the 10 M Planck for your first one to appear, then Hawking would be surprised. What are you telling is wrong with Einstein's equation and all that? So therefore, that's already an argument that as soon as you go much higher than M Planck, you have to have some. Otherwise, the description, then the quantum gravity description should be okay, the semi-classical description, and therefore you should have seen it. So I would say that these are always saying that the index cannot be too big.
Right, and so forth.
So these are already pushing you in that direction. So I think we have already a heuristic argument based on black holes that there should be a tower version.
The commutative string argument also that power exists already a finite string coupling. Mm-hmm. Some of the high excited states are small black holes.
It might be difficult though to identify that string in the type of compact applications. There is a very concrete setup I have in mind. We can discuss later.
I think upon this argument, it's pretty good that perturbative corners and like far away from them, you know, asymptotic corners in the model space, you'll see the tower of states, and then these guys become more and more unstable. But the lightest state in the tower will always be stable, right? So at least you should have that state. And as long as asymptotically you have a lattice which is not too sparse, I would expect that the same sparseness would hold inside.
Yeah, this question is very tied to the stability.
Right.
Different particles.
I think also gravity is an important reason, because you can, of course, get towers in the inside of the modular space, they're coming from non-Euclidean strings. The gravity is decoupled, and there you have all the kind of games you can play of towers becoming tensionless and so on, charge states and so on, but you don't have gravity in the game. So somehow, gravity is a very important ingredient in this kind of discussion.
Okay. Maybe we move on to this question, how is the Swampland distance conjecture related to ideas in duality, and what is the nature of those states, which has come up before? So, of course, we all know, and it's completely obvious, that what happens at infinite distance, say, in a 10-dimensional theory, if we may start with this as a first example, then we have this familiar duality star, and the idea is that as we go to infinite distance, we get either weakly coupled strings, so type to A, type to B, etc., which of course are related by duality. Or Or we can, the only other possibility in 10 dimensions would be a decompactification limit, of course, to, in this case, 11dm theory, which then is not necessarily weakly coupled. In fact, has no coupling at all in that case.
So I don't understand your duality arrow.
So that's just that theories can be, that the different string theories are related by a duality. So going...
You go from weakly coupled one to weakly coupled, I mean, you can't go from weakly...
No, this need not be an S-duality, but some duality. There's some duality between
also
the
word weakly coupled may be subject to interpretation. You're absolutely right that M theory has no coupling, but there's a sense in which there's a weak coupling description, which means if you're interested in weak gravitational field, you use Einstein's theory.
Yes.
And you're okay.
Fine.
Therefore, you don't get quantum pressure. It's not like saying, oh, everything is strongly coupled, you cannot talk about anything. That's not true.
No, but I just meant here, the modulus that we have in 10 dimensions would be, of course, the dilaton. And taking this to zero, we would get some string theory of whatever type, or alternatively we get a decompactification of some M theory or rather Witten theory or something.
You never get control to elements, right?
Okay. String theories are dual to each other. That was all I wanted to recall. So the important question now is what type of behavior do we expect or can we get in lower dimensions? So what is the analog or what is the
Sorry, this picture is in lower dimensions already. What are you drawing? I don't understand.
This is in 10 dimensions.
No, what do you mean? 2a and 2b in 10 dimensions are not connected. You have to go to 9 dimensions to connect.
Yes, that was, I think, part of the criticism.
So you were already in the lower dimensions. So.
If you like, yes. So what behavior in say, 4 dimensions or even lower dimensions?
Even lower dimensions.
So which types of towers can occur? So clearly, Kaluza-Klein towers can still occur. So the possible towers would be, in fact, the correct question to ask is, what possible towers can be the leading towers as we go to infinite distance? So which are the possible leading towers? So whose mass is smaller than the mass of any other tower? So clearly the KK tower is obviously an option, which is a tower controlled in this way to the mass of the tower. Of course, a string tower is still another option, which is characteristically a tower of that type. So could there be, the question would be, can there be other towers? So, for example, you can have situations where you have wrapped brains, wrapped BBS brains. They can mimic this behavior, but one could still call them KK towers. This is, of course, exactly what happens when you have, say, the D0 brain in this case, or wrapped brains on tori, where you have exactly that same behavior. So this can be either straightforward KK, of course, as we all know, or this can also be possibly mimicked by suitable wrapped brains. So BBS, etc. This one here, possibly. Can there be anything else? So if there were something else, this would of course be fantastic, because then we would have a new theory, which is not either a higher dimensional theory, which then has to be re-examined, or it would be or a string theory. For example, we could there be a membrane theory in lower dimensions? And the obvious conjecture is to say that this should not be the case. So the conjecture would be that the only possible towers that we can get are either KK towers or string towers. So one could call this, if one likes, string duality or string emergence conjecture as a possible refinement of the original idea of duality that was, of course, all over the place already. That would be that the leading tower would be either a KK tower. In this case, we really decompactify, so we are not taking a limit where we keep gravity finite. Or if we want an equidimensional tower, a limit where we stay in the same number of dimensions, a weakly coupled fundamental string theory. And if this is true, yes, just one more, sentence, if this is true, this of course has consequences, in particular, for instance, on the computation of the alpha here, because this would then mean that this alpha would either be the one that we get from a KK reduction, which we can, of course, compute, or it would be the one, essentially the dilaton of whatever string theory we're in whatever dimensions. In both cases, it's obvious that the alpha is order one, and then the numerical values depend on the specific type, yes.
Why do you say weakly coupled fundamental string? It could be other things. Why should it be?
It could be. It could be, but the conjecture is that it's not.
Well, that's not true. Take M theory on T2.
Yes.
Take T2 to be zero size.
Exactly. Then we decompactify. I would.
No. But the dual theory. No, you start with 11 dimension. There are two theories which are dual to each other. M theory and 11 dimension with itself are dual via T2 to zero size.
But, I mean, this would be a this would be the F theory limit, right? Where we take the core.
Tau is for I, in other words. Take tau equals to I in the F theory language. So it's strongly coupled type 2B.
Right.
So I'm just taking.
I mean, the string could be, I mean, maybe fundamental in the limit where it is. I mean, it could be a D1 brain that could become light, or the D1 string could become light. But once it's light, it will be weakly coupled, and then one could switch it back.
I don't know why we should insist on string theory, but okay.
Okay, so it would be interesting to see if we have other towers. So. One thing.
You're interested in the nature of the tower.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay.
In the nature.
You're asking if the nature of the tower is always particle or strings. Let me say it that way, if it's okay.
Second.
Maybe what you're asking is related to whether the tower is always related to particle or strings.
Right.
Yeah, because the decompactification, maybe it's decompactification in a dual frame, but not in the theory that you are studying.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So it's.
Of course, it's proper.
Exactly. So that the. Yeah. It's more
so, you know, if you're saying that you cannot have, for example, light membranes.
As the leading tower, yeah, that would be the conjecture. They will come down, but we should, of course, as always, well known, we should, of course, first take into account the effect of the leading tower, and then reevaluate what happens to all the.
So, you're saying that the example I just gave you where the leading tower was wrapped around T2?
Yes.
Or what then?
I would say these are.
Oh, you're saying these are particles. Sorry, you want to have,
these are
have something which is so you have the D3 brain or some higher brain which is wrapped around this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's reasonable. Okay.
Yeah. And
do you claim this also in higher dimensions than 4?
Yes.
Because before it's kind of clear. In 4, the only things that are controlled are really particles and strings.
Yes.
So if you have, for example, light membranes, then the dual theory, which had become strongly coupled, is some kind of 6 theory, and you should say that this limit is not available. So I'm not surprised by this in 4D. But you are saying that, say, if I compactify to 6 dimensions,
exactly,
where I certainly could have other objects.
Yes. And that's
this is what I'm going to talk about.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very good.
So I think I should hand over.
Oh.
But maybe we first, I don't know, if we first
discuss more, or
we can discuss.
Yeah, we can discuss.
You guys decide whichever order.
So, indeed, the question is, we have this very well-known picture in between 9 and 11 dimensions, say. So how does it look in lower dimensions? And the question is, there are various questions. Of course, what is the behavior as a cusp? What is sort of the nature of the physics? What kind of towers do we get? What are the mathematical properties which govern this physics? This was our main question. Actually, I'm referring to work done with Timo and Sung-Ju Lee. And there's a whole sequence of papers, also especially with Irene, Eran Palti, Thomas Grimm, and so on. So this is sort of sketched here. And of course, the question was also, can we discover something new? For example, in the inside of the modular space, we had surprises like tensionless non-critical strings, which were sort of surprising discoveries, were invented by Witten, I think, in 1995. So is it conceivable that we don't find such things somehow surprisingly in some strange limits? So before we address this question, there was somehow the attitude in the community, there's a general mess in general, so we, at a generic point, and so we really don't know what kind of structure the physics has we find there. And now, as Timo was anticipating already, the picture is now relatively clear because essentially we have only these two possibilities. And so we just proceed by considering evidence. So evidence for this string emergence conjecture. We consider Calabi-Yau compactifications. And we know, of course, that Calabi-Yau has a complex structure in Kähler moduli. And we have hypermultiplet and vector multiplets in four or higher dimensions. And let's consider the vector multiplets, of course, and still we have a complex structure and the mirror Kähler moduli space at our disposal, related by mirror symmetry. And the question is, what is the limiting behavior of these moduli spaces at the cusps? It's well known here that in the complex structure moduli space we have, according to the SYZ theorem, that we always have a local T3 fragmentation over some base V3. On the other hand, here actually it was not so much well known, and this is why we were focusing on this for a while. So let's consider the Kähler moduli first. Kähler moduli. And so we have a Kähler form J, we expand it. And we assume we take one parameter large to be write it as lambda J naught plus the rest. We want to have lambda going to infinity. And then, interestingly, there is a theorem by Oguizu which claims the following. In such a situation, we have a local structure, the asymptotic structure of the Calabi-Yau is governed only by three cases. It can be a T2 fibration. It can be a K3 fibration. Or it can be a T4 fibration. So that's for three folds, probably for higher folds, there's some corresponding continuation. And there were certain classes, and actually these things depend on the various intersection properties of these Kähler classes. And essentially there are only two different cases. We call it class A, which covers this one, which amounts to saying that J naught cube is zero, while J squared is non-zero. This is, of course, exactly what we have, because we want to take a limit, keeping the total volume finite. We don't want to go to our infinite volume, because we want to keep the dimension fixed. And that's a limit where the Planck mass is constant. So we want to keep gravity in the game. Yeah? So we consider limits where we do not want to decouple gravity. So this means finite volume.
You can also consider the other limits and study the ratio of the mass of the tower with respect to the Planck mass and see if it still goes to zero or not.
Yeah. No, this is implicit in this discussion. The idea is really considering constant volume limits. So then we have class B, which is the rest, which is not squared, is zero. And that covers these three cases. So the logic is that we consider, a fibration. We also have a fiber, then we have a base. The volume of the base goes to infinity. The total volume is finite. And this means the fiber must shrink to zero size. Yeah? And that, of course, leads to asymptotically tensionless objects, red brains and strings and so on. So now two examples. Example one Calabial, sorry, M theory on Calabial. There, in the three cases, the T2, K3, and T4 vibrations give, well, the dominant degrees of freedom are two planes on the T2 here and five planes on K3 here and five planes on T4. And that turns out to lead to a decompactification limit. This is actually five dimensional here on. This goes to six dimensional F theory on some Calabial, a different one. Then this gives a nearly or asymptotically tensionless heterotic string, not surprisingly, on a K3, a different one than this one, process one. In this case, we get an asymptotically tensionless type 2 string on some D manifold denoted by Z, process one. And the point is, however, it looks simple, but it actually requires a quite detailed analysis of all the possible cases. You really have to specify, you know, what Kähler classes scale in which way, and then you have to the constant volume condition. And then you have to sort out in each case what is the dominant asymptotically tangent dominant tower in each situation. Yeah. This is a lengthy analysis, and this is the output. And indeed, we have just the two cases, either decompactification or tensionless strings, or asymptotically weakly coupled tensionless strings. Example 2, type 2A, on the same Calabial in four dimensions. So the T2 vibration implies always decompactification to E larger than equal 5. This means, a priori, it's an entier limit because the coupling goes to infinity. but there can be nested limits, so it can go up subsequently even higher than five dimensions. Then we have K3 case.
So in case one, you didn't consider Calabial itself go to zero size?
No, because we want to keep the volume constant.
Okay, we want to keep the volume
constant. Because the large complex structure limit is both volume must stay finite, otherwise we definitely have decompactification.
No, I'm thinking suppose you take the, I'm talking about not infinite size, I'm taking the zero size. I'm asking, do you ask the question of what is the entropy on a Calabial three-fold of zero size?
That's certainly the opposite regime, which cannot be treated in this way because quantum corrections will be very strong.
That's a good question, so you don't know the answer.
No. And actually, it's a glimpse of this is in this case, as I was just about to say. If we consider a K3 vibration, and we want to have this situation, naively, the K3 vibration shrinks to zero size, and then we have the situation, but we cannot have it, because in this case, type 2A in Calabial, we have quantum corrections, virtually instantons. And it's well known that manifolds don't shrink to zero size, actually, if you take this instanton correction into account. So this looks like a decompactification limit, because if the base goes to infinite size and the fiber cannot shrink to zero, the whole thing blows up. However, the Planck mass square over string square, goes like 1 over string coupling times the volume. So if you co-scale the coupling, we can maintain a finite Planck scale. Yeah? So in this co-scale situation, so under co-scaling of coupling, we obtain, which is of course not surprising, the four-dimensional heterotic string, which is well known. And in the T4 case, if you do the same game, we necessarily have decompactification to five dimensions. So in other words, in the type 2 situation on Calabials, we generically really have only decompactification limits with some exception. So this is evidence for this conjecture. And I should say there were some subsequent works, in particular by interesting paper by Baum, Marchesano, and Wiesner, who took this philosophy but considered the hyperbolic integrate modular space, which is much more complicated. Instantons, of course, are much more And they found, and the naive expectation was there would be some towers of tensionless instantons. So this has been floating around a while before, but it turns out upon a very, very detailed and careful analysis that these instantons modify the geometry in a way that at the end, if you really compute the towers, the dominant degrees of freedom again are string tower. So this is a quite non-trivial, non-trivial chain of arguments which leads to this conclusion. So again, this conjecture is there's support for this conjecture. Now, for completeness, I should also mention that there were, starting before our work, a different approach addressing more or less the same questions but from a different perspective, and that was an approach put forward by Deran, by Thomas and Irene, and some other collaborators, by addressing the complex structure side of this and considering making use of the monotomy properties. Irene, please feel free to interfere at any moment. I'm reporting on your work. Yeah? So I just try to present it in a concise... this doesn't mean concise, but it means complex structure. concise fashion. So in the large complex structure limit, we know that the fibration structure is T3 over fiber over some geometric base. This is the SYZ conjecture. So this is only asymptotically true. And the relevant degrees of freedom we talk about here are these three waves wrapping around this fiber. Yeah? And the key point is consider monodromies. That is, of course, what you do naturally in the complex structure moduli space. So let's put it a singularity is equal to zero. And then the monodrome is defined by considering the period vector rotating my Gaussian small loop around the singularity. And then we have a transformation acting on the period vector, which lies in some symplectic S3, 2 plus 2H, 2 1 or whatever big matrix, the monotomy transformation. And then what one can show that T being of infinite order, that's equivalent to say large distance, just singularity. That also is tied to an infinite tower of states becoming massless. And in this case, one can define a matrix by taking the log of this monotomy matrix, n, and n is nilpotent, so n dies off at some power. And there is now asymptotic behavior of the periods determined by the properties of this n, and that is referred to the nilpotent orbit theorem. And in a way, this is sort of the mathematical structure responsible for these properties from the type 2, from the complex structure side of view, and from our Keller point of view, it was the Obese theorem about these vibration structures. So in each side of the story, you have one key mathematical property which is relevant here.
May I say one thing?
Yes.
Everything is fine. Just. It's true that we started in the complex structure model space, but actually all this machinery we are using also applies to the Keller model space, because one can always define some nilpotent operator.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
limit in terms of the intersection numbers.
I just say, let me put one more line here. Yeah? You can write down the asymptotic behavior of the period is governed by this matrix N, so it's roughly speaking up to some factors, N times some vector which depends on the other moduli, the rest, if we single out one particular collection particular, In order to talk about monotomies, you need to have two things. First of all, the variable, you know, the complex structure variable on which you define the monotomy, and then the variables on which the monotomy acts, which are the T's. Of course, these are the Kelly moduli. Yeah. But I would say, in order to meaningfully talk about monotomies, in order to define them, you have to introduce Z, and that means the actual loop you do in the moduli space, the complex structure moduli space. If you just consider the variables T, what do you mean is monotomy?
But T is just the log of C.
No, in general, not. No, it's only the simple relationship between T is log C is only valid here. So local. Otherwise, you have the corrections to it.
Yeah, but I think that all this machinery, in fact, when you read all these mathematician papers, it's not really tied to have some manifold even. It's like just some algebraic structure that will hold true as long as you can define
it. Yeah, okay, this is a very good point you make.
So
this machinery is entirely based on monotomies. It doesn't really talk about the geometry.
Exactly.
Yeah? So from here, it's difficult to actually make a contact to these vibration structures I was just talking before. Yeah.
Actually, what I find super nice is that when we apply all this to the Kellen moduli space and we have our classification mm-hmm. of the different types of limits, it nicely matches exactly with the same thing that you obtained.
Yeah, actually, when we saw your table, and just the next thing I wanted to write down, I was very, very delighted. Yeah, let me put it. Namely, now we introduce an integer d such that n to the d times a naught is not zero. The maximum power, max value of d. Yeah? And this is a beautiful story. So you have only a few cases. Yeah? So this means essentially you don't have a logarithmic behavior at all. You have a finite situation. You have only a finite order monotomy. So this means in your notation, this is a case 1, case 2, case 3, case 4. And that corresponds to finite distance monotomy. This is like the conifold. And that means essentially, you know, maximal monotomy, that corresponds to the point of maximal omnipresent monotomy. This means 3 logs. This is the large complex structure limit, which is infinite volume. So this is not what we want to consider. This is a genuine decompactification. But these two cases map to what we call class B. And this is what we call class A. So this case is tied to T2 vibration, this to T2, K3, T4 vibrations. So here you see how very nicely this complements each other. So I'm not sure how much more I should say. Actually, this is not a talk, but a discussion, so I don't want to.
So in the type 2 case, there are still distinctions between K3, T4, etc.
What?
So in the type 2 case, there are still K3 or T4 or different cases. So how do you see that? How is this distinction reflected on the monotomy? Yes.
This is actually not so. Actually, I don't think that the monotomy is fine enough to distinguish these cases here.
Oh, I see.
I mean, it would be something interesting to study because also within these types, there are subtypes. Right?
You have all the more subtypes, and it's not entirely clear. I mean, in the end, everything depends on the intersection numbers. Classical intersection, from your starting point. So in each case, it's the intersection numbers which determine all the properties. So either we are entering here the properties of this N, or in this Fugazi theorem, similar stuff. So in a way, it's the same mathematics, right?
And the coordinates always which is the leading object, right? Because otherwise one gets confused and thinks
this is a very important point. You need to put some little more physics input here. Namely, you have to look A for finite volume, and you have to disentangle this, the scaling behavior of the wires left objects in order to identify the leading tower. Yeah. And that turns out, even sometimes surprisingly, always to be a string tower.
Also, do you find, because when we did this, the thing is that the exponential rate, no, this order one factor, the distance conjecture,
yeah,
was depending on this small d.
Yeah, actually,
do you find any difference between the T2, B3, T4 vibration? Or does, I mean, this finer splitting matters regarding
the... As far as the masses are concerned?
Yeah.
Yes, because it's it runs into a different theory. One would say the weakly coupled string theory, and then the alpha is the one as you get from the Dillard-Long. Mm-hmm. In the other case, it's a KK tower. So the alpha you get is the one that you get in compactifying from one to the other. So these numbers for the alphas should match that. I looked yesterday at your papers. I didn't find complete match. But we may have normalized fields a bit differently, but they look very similar. We should sort this out with factors of two later.
So the D enters here in the metric, and this means the shift of the scalar field, the distance, all the square of D enters here. And that means exactly what Timur was saying, the D also enters crucially in this exponent alpha. There's some other factor here. I think it's here.
Yeah.
Was there?
Yeah, there should be one.
Okay, so come on.
So I have a question. So if I understand correctly, your conjecture here that the leading tower is either a KK or a weakly coupled string. I'm just wondering, and that means that it's not like instant tower, it's not the leading tower.
Exactly.
So let me just say one particular case, which it has to be either instant tower or membrane. At least, let me cook up an example like that. Take MTR and a G2 manifold, which has vanishing first and second homology.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing you can do is to wrap M2, Euclidean M2 grain, which gives you instantons if you shrink that three cycle, or M5 grains wrapped around that three cycle, which gives you tensionless membranes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good point.
So what happens there?
It is not clear what happens there because this relates to a further question. This is now 5D n equal 4D n equal 1.
Yeah.
So we have certainly superpotential to work with, and also the structure of the kinetic terms is not so clear in take into account. So it could be one possibility, one way out. We did think about it. One possibility could be that we simply go to a deconvectification limit in this way.
Okay.
If we take the M2 grain instantons, they become small, so they will be completely changing the structure of kinetic terms, and it could be that at the end of the day we run into the deconvectification limit. Not dissimilar, but more drastic than from what happens, for example, in this type 2A vector multiplet story, where also the quantum corrections, in that case, Wolchit instant corrections, It prevented one from taking the limit where something shrinks. So this is very interesting to study, but also very hard because of the n equal 1. So the way out was, so to speak, to say it's either KK or third. It could also be obstructed completely, that there is no
potential.
Yeah,
it could
exactly,
be
which would
possible.
Be
yeah.
Number three, which could have been 5D n equal 1.
Yeah.
So that would be maybe, there we go, assuming already that we can take the limit.
Yeah, obstruction.
Yeah.
But then it's not really a limit.
Yeah.
Right, so you want flat
potential. But that relates nicely to the fifth point maybe we should discuss now. What happens in situations where we may not have a flat direction, as is typically the case in non-SUSY or even n equal 1 situations? Do we expect some version of the conjecture to hold?
Yeah, assuming we have many
variables. Are there any ideas?
As approximation, I think we have just, is there a logic we can still have here?
So one consequence of distance conjecture without assuming this is that there are extended objects in the theory. Now, I just want to know how it jives well with this restriction that can you have an explanation of that the tower would be KK or a string? Is there any further? This is an observation you're making and conjecture you're making. Is there anything similar to that somehow required, like compactifying it on something? I don't know. What is there any way to justify it?
Well, the justification, independent of examples, would be, well, it's not a justification. It's just the statement that otherwise one would get is a quantum theory of gravity that would be something completely new. Right?
That would be exciting.
It would be super exciting.
This was, of course, the aim was to exclude this.
So the argument was that good things don't happen.
Well, okay, but guys, so you don't have any a priori argument that it
shouldn't
be.
other questions.
So I think what was a good thing, the new theory of gravity, in the sense that...
That you would, I don't know, for example, a membrane theory. A theory with weakly coupled, with a weakly coupled membrane, which is lighter, or not as light as the KK tau, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, wait a second. But you are not claiming that the weakly coupled string here provides a string theory.
Oh, yes, of course.
No, so this is the strong version of distance conjecture, yeah, that okay, distance means always the dual.
Sorry, but exactly. then you would need to say that the KK tau is scale. It's parametrically higher than the string.
So
it is the string come down.
In all the examples studied, it sits parametrically at the same scale.
Then you can't claim what you just claimed.
Well, it
no,
is.
No, it did. No.
At the same rate.
I don't know if you claimed it, and I have to
understand. Also had the string also itself compactified in some space, and then we have extra KK towers. For example, in this case with the M5 frame. Wrapping a K3 fiber, you have the 5-brain wrapping K3 gives, of course, the heterotic string, but you have also M2 brains, and this gives rise to extra KK towers, and reflecting that this heterotic string is, of course, not in 10 dimension, but itself sits on some other K3 cross U1, cross S1. Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah. So this scales KK and string scale, they co-scale in the same way.
Yeah, I understand. The cool thing would be,
the situation is the same. It's like always. I mean, we have a string tower and we have a KK tower, and it is a little bit below. It's numerically below, just like in usual string theory.
Right.
But it's
no. In usual string theory, in 10D, you really
no. In 5, we have
4D.
Cool. We have a 4-dimensional.
That's of course the whole point. Yeah. But in 10D and only in 10D,
yes,
you can have the string tower below everything else.
Sure.
In this case, you say, okay, the string is a special. It provides the quantum material gravity. So the first thing would have a situation where this happens in 4D, which apparently is not the case. And then only can you ask for a new theory where it happens with brains, membranes, or something like that.
I mean, we make that point very clearly in the paper. It's always the conventional situation.
But could have been the thing since last talk to make progress and you had it
could
now.
Have been.
Yeah, I mean, if you get some parametric separation, it would mean some string theory in lower dimensions.
Actually, we've been toying around with this. And for example, one point of view I like to take is if the heterotic string wouldn't have been invented and we wouldn't know about, you know, but we were just starting these vibration structures and found K3, and then we would have found the heterotic string as one of the limits. Yeah. So it might have been that we could have run in some other things like a mixture of two heterotic strings. So it's some weird stuff, some ill-defined stuff. You know, but it doesn't happen. There's always a single, weakly coupled, nice, wonderful.
There is a generalization of this conjecture, which is beyond the Sonnenplatz program, which is nothing to do with gravity. So it could be the following conjecture could be true, that any time you get in physics any tower of light state, it has to be like either KK or weakly coupled string.
Yeah.
Evidence for that would be even the conformal field theories that we do know, and they do happen at finite distance. You either have particles or strings, not higher dimensional, yeah, as the most basic elements of the light state. So this statement might be a general feature of having towers, not necessarily tied directly to gravity per se.
But how is it, for example, in E string or other CFGs that we would get at finite distance?
That's the difference, of course. So that's a striking difference between the appearance in the gravity that you always go to infinite distance, but in the conformal theory setup, at finite distance this happens. Finite distance, but you still get the tower.
Right.
It could have been a membrane, for example, in 6D, you could have had a theory which has light membrane as a basic ingredient, not strings, but that's not what we get.
But for example, in the E string case, so we do get the light string, yes, non-critical string. How do we interpret the excitations of that string?
Well, they're just light states, so they're tensionless strings. In the limit of
there's
zero tension strings.
And strongly coupled.
They're strongly coupled, but there are that's the fact that strongly coupled might be related to the fact that it's finite distance. Nevertheless, the feature I'm pointing out to the feature that you're distinguishing KK and strings, and I'm saying that feature also appears in this other tower, which is a finite distance. So that's interesting to see whether there's a towery reason for that, not gravity reason. That's what I'm trying to ask the question.
Okay. So, Timo, you want to
discuss? Should we maybe also discuss some applications? Now, So, of course, as many people in here know much better than I do, many applications are important in the context of cosmology, and this would be very interested in your input. What the status and what the state of the art is when it comes to really making the please to start.
So the fact that you make the transition makes me wonder something very busy, which we discussed before. So all the statements so far, they were always true for genuine modulized spaces. Mm-hmm. So whenever we do applications, we lift them. Is it because you're always going to boundaries that you don't care too much about whether these are true modulized spaces or not? Since you make asymptotic statements, it should always be valid. Is that the philosophy?
I think the philosophy is first that you want to study it in situations where you have a moduli space, but indeed it's crucial to take the next step. What happens if
you don't? But you would make all of the same statements if the moduli are lifted or not.
If the moduli are lifted, does it make sense to even define or to even make a statement? So what do we mean if we have a situation where we have no flat directions? If we have just a discrete in the vacuum, we can't make the statement. If we have We have to work with the potential that we have. There's no point in saying we have a would-be modulus, but there's a potential. If there's a potential, there's no modulus. So then we cannot take that limit. So it might be, and probably is the case, certainly, that in non-supersymmetric theories, we cannot really apply this. Okay, we cannot really test this because there's no moduli space to start with.
Why not? Why not? You take any oriented field and go to a model n equals 1 and go to infinity.
Yes.
That has to be
studied, though.
Surely what you say will be still be true.
We'll see.
I mean, in any case, when
corrections have to be taken into account.
Yeah, but they are small.
You still get a bound on the geodesic distance, but it may not be the quantity you want.
Yeah.
Bound.
Yeah.
But also, the presence of the tower, I think, is relating to the singular limit, right? I don't know. I mean, of course, one has to study again. What happens with the exponential rate, the trajectories, and so on, becomes more complicated. But the fact that there will be a tower should not change, mm-hmm. because I have lifted some mm-hmm. directions.
Mm-hmm. But if a tower comes from wrapping rings over calibrated cycles, couldn't that calibration be lost because of fluxes, say, that lift the moduli? Or not?
I think it should still be true that they are massless at the singular point. But could be also that sometimes when lifting or adding more ingredients, maybe you don't have this wrapping busy brain, but then now you have other states, you know, that play a role. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's an important question.
But in addition, I would really now like to learn what the state of the art of how this actually constrains inflation. Let me just make the obvious zero order statement that you all know, and then maybe the experts can jump in. So a delta phi is obviously now constrained in situations of inflation because, for instance, for inflation, we want the Hubble scale to be smaller than the cutoff of the quantum gravity, which we can take to be the tower scale. So if we want to insist on that, we would get a range for inflation which would be approximately bounded by the log of, say, M Planck, which I identify with M0 over the Hubble scale. And this is sandwiched in from the Lyth bound, at least for single field slow roll inflation. This would be the Lyth bound if I assume a monotonically decreasing epsilon. So this would be Lyth. This would be Swanton distance conjecture. And I should say this has been studied by many people also here in the audience, in particular by Yvonne and Irene, and of course also Arthur and Alex and many more. So as you know, for slow roll inflation, we can then make this more precise. And for instance, as Irene and Scalisi showed, we can use this nice relation that the Planck scale over the Hubble scale for single field and slow roll is related to the amplitude of scalars times R, the scalar to tensor ratio. So this would give a way how to actually constrain single field slow roll inflation. I think the current value of the Planck data would be that this should be approximately 3 times 10 to the minus 4 or 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the 4. So this would give about like delta phi of the order 5 to 10 and Planckish, something like this, depending on what you do with alpha. So clearly alpha is important. But I understand that this is only for a single fleet slow roll, and it has been discussed in detail in the literature how this can be evaded, what can be evaded. So please educate us, the experts on inflation. What is, in your opinion, the state of the art? Alex, maybe Irina, Arthur, please, Yvonne, please.
So yeah, I guess single fleet inflation, yes, it's hard to see a way around even this Planckian statement, let's say, which I don't know, it's related really to a conjecture or more to inflation itself. So I think inflation by itself has to worry about the Planckian problem. But once you go beyond single field, then things open up. So it's so the light bound is applies still in the sense that this is the effective displacement delta phi, but this is not a geodesic trajectory. That's the point, in multi-field, we are not necessarily going to move along a geodesic. So then, in order to constrain anything, it's not just about the tower, but it's also about what type of trajectories or potentials we can get in a string theory.
Yeah.
I think if I can engineer any trajectory and turning and turning and turning, then I don't have any bound coming from this. But the question is, yeah, what type of potentials can I get, no, in this large field?
Yeah, but it's relatively easy, because as soon as there's interaction between the fields, you're bound to be to move away of a geodesic. Meaning either the metric, either the interaction comes because the metric couples fields. And so the potential may look like a phi square for the two fields, but then they are coupled through the metric. Or the metric you want to be is canonical normalized, but the potential is...
Well, I mean, I think what we were studying... Well, if you want to
start. Yeah, and then please finish your point.
I mean, well, Eran studied, and that I also started to study, that it's not so easy to engineer these turning trajectories. Like, even if you think that you are starting to move along some trajectory...
Actually, it's very easy, but
the backreaction...
Which backreaction?
So when you study, at least, I mean, of course, this really depends on the setup, so it's very difficult to make some general estimate. But like when we were studying these flux compactifications in Calabi-Yau manifolds, and you go to these, in, like, these large field distance regimes, the backreaction, I mean, because of the form of the scalar potential, implies that the same, I mean, when you are displacing, for example, an axion, also makes you displace the axion, so in the end, you are moving so far away from the geodesic.
That's something that we like to understand.
But
it's
easy, do you mean effective field theory or string theory?
Let's maybe give the word to Arthur, who wants it.
Because it seems that as soon as I put everything in the context of supergravity, supergravity is not string theory, right?
Yeah.
But we kind of use it all the time, and somehow it seems difficult in supergravity, and not in string theory.
Arthur, and then come on.
I think there are... I mean, before going into the details of model building, I think we should say what the conceptual ideas are that exist here, okay? The fundamental conceptual ideas in the quantum transform and gravity. And they are monodromy, which is well understood as gauging or Higgsing of a zero form. And there are constraints of gravity, which limit the extent to which the monodromic axion can be moved. And these constraints are not strong enough to limit inflation significantly. So I'm not saying that they are good models, I'm just saying this is a conceptual status. The other conceptual situation or approach is to take two or more axions and have a winding trajectory. This is known as KNP, Kim Lewis Colossal. And then there is a more concrete realization or a maybe more harder Swampland realization by Higgsing a linear combination of two axions such that one direction remains light. which implements this winding in a hard way. And again, there are examples. You can see how it might work. And again, of course, in the end, it is limited by whether there is or is not a landscape with a model is stable, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I think these conceptual ideas somehow, to me, are more clear than, of course, more generally, I have any potential, I can have a winding trajectory for whatever reason. That's also true.
So there are two aspects to the trajectory. One is based on potential, and the other one, kinetic one. So let's talk about potential one. When we talk about moduli space, we're talking about the low energy vacuum of the string theory. So the distance on the minimum of the on the bottom of the potential or near the flat bottom of the potential satisfies the distance conjecture, not on a bigger space.
Right.
There's a stronger statement. So you cannot take a space which is small and dig a potential which is kind of spirals around and say, oh, it belongs, because that would be against the distance conjecture. In other words, those potentials will be ruled out. That would be part of the distance conjecture.
You remember there was a paper we wrote some time ago, which we discussed, in fact, where you have a simple type 2B flux model, where you have this throat of a moduli space, where you go to infinity and you have an epsilon going around, right? And you can, by flux choice, make this axion distance in flat space. I mean, there's no inflation model here, larger by a factor of order 10.
But I'm not saying there's no geodesic you cannot write down which goes around the axion. That's not what I'm asking. Let me explain.
For inflation, it's sufficient to do that.
No, we can talk about that. I'm just saying that was the kinetic version I was going to get to.
I see. Okay. So
the potential, you cannot use the potential to say I will just go around in spiral and force it to be that and avoid the distance conjecture by going around it.
If you mean I'm going to build the potential by itself and this
yes,
is
that doesn't yes. work. No.
No, it really, for a stranger it will come at
yeah. In other words, the distance conjecture should be interpreted as what applies to the bottom of the potential anyhow,
right.
Because in string theory, when we talk about the moduli, there are massive modes and we're ignoring them. This is not sitting, it could be that bigger space, the distances are shorter or whatever. We are not talking about that.
So they're
not
distances in the middle. Normalized space.
Sorry?
You would say canonically normalized fields? This
yes, canonically normalized fields.
Then, okay, yeah.
So then the question would become more the kinetic version, which
yeah.
is not related.
So just to understand what you say. So you are saying model builders should not try to
yes.
look for models which do that because this won't work.
No, that's a guess. I mean, either that or distance conjecture is wrong. Because distance conjecture, the only sense it could make is at the bottom of the potential.
Does distance conjecture imply, in your opinion, that I cannot construct
such a potential? Yes.
A potential where I can, in the flat, on flat space, so to speak, on the bottom, go a distance of, say,
geodesic distances.
Geodesic distances.
Geodesic distances.
But
with the shortest distance being
exactly.
Well, that's the. I mean,
this is exactly related to the discussion we had with the vertical conjecture, whether you can fix a particular linear combination of
yes.
of axions, and then it's whether the weak ridge conjecture or the distance conjecture applies at what scale.
In the strong form, for example.
Yeah. So we've had this discussion before, and I don't think there's a clear answer yet.
Yeah. No, the statement of distance conjecture should be that you always state it at the bottom of the potential.
I agree with that. It should be, but there's, with the weak ridge conjecture, people came up with setups, and nobody has ruled them out.
We have to have constructions in string theory.
Okay, or do we have to prove that they are not constructible? So. Nobody has a.
I'm saying that if you find this, then you have disproven distance conjecture. That's what I'm saying. In other words, they're the same statement.
Some strong
distance
form,
conjecture
right?
is not. Well, distance conjecture is cannot be even formulated without saying you're looking at the bottom. What does moduli mean? We do know that these guys are at the bottom of some potential.
Well, it's clear what it means when you have massless moduli. When you start.
No. I'm saying that there is a potential even here. I'm saying. Even the masses must have potential.
Yeah, sure.
In the direction you are at the bottom of the potential. So this is
but
the bottom.
Inflation, we're not yeah. at the bottom of the potential. I think that's what the.
So we are. I'm saying that to the extent that we are scanning the bottom of the potential, this should start or essentially flat potential. We should have the weak gravity conjecture applied. Well, be expected to apply. If you have a counterexample, that'd be great because then we learn that weak gravity conjecture by itself is not correct, and that we should understand those.
I still beg to disagree. I thought whatever, maybe I misread, but the statements about the distance conjecture, I remember, just make reference to the geodesic in field space, meaning
the metric. I can give a trivial counterexample. Take a torus, very trivial counterexample. Take the upper half plane, and you can have spiral things which would infinitely far away and doesn't go to infinity.
Yeah, but then, but they still have, in terms of the original field space.
It will go into distance, I know.
Along the wide, yeah, along the wide path.
I am giving you an example.
But that's, not the geodesic distance.
It's geodesic.
No,
it's not the shortest distance. It's not the shortest distance, but it's a geodesic path.
Yeah.
I'm saying shortest path, not geodesic. So let me be clear. The distance function means if you take any point and take the geodesic shortest distance path, not a geodesic, shortest distance path. Otherwise, it's an easy counterexample. I don't have to work hard. I can just give you, take the upper half, let me just give you a very simple example. Take the upper half plane. You know that in the upper half plane, you need mod alpha S of 2z, you get this, the usual marginalized space. The geodesics are given by big circles. If you take the big circle starting from irrational points on the real axis and the two ends, that means it never gets to the infinity. In this case, you're just going infinitely far. You're spiraling around infinite amount of distance without ever getting to the infinity, and this is geodesic. This is a big circle. I just gave you a counter example. That's not what we mean, of course.
I think the point of Arthur and why is that since we are interested in field range because we are looking at large field model with a very high energy scale, so part of the delta phi is coming from the region where we are at the bottom of the model.
Well, this one is the bottom of the potential I'm talking about. But I'm saying even the bottom of the potential, you can have this kind of behavior. That's not, that is related to the fact that this kind of behavior would be possible. This is not inconsistent with distance conjecture. That would be perfectly consistent with distance conjecture.
The way I understand the conjecture is whenever you can have a parametric separation between the orthogonal directions and the ones along which you might want to inflate, then the conjecture.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
It's going to apply.
Yeah.
And if we find a corner example, then it's...
Yeah. I think that's what we mean by distance conjecture.
Okay, I think we have to clear the room sooner or later, but maybe we should. Are there any further aspects, complete aspects, just to make the prompt of the aspects so we know what else to discuss overlaps that we have not discussed and should have discussed? Just give us the prompts and then we continue over lunch with it if there's anything you feel was missed.
Lunch?
Apart from lunch. Okay, good. Then let's go for lunch. Okay, thank you.